day, and welcome to the Fuels America Reacts to the EPA's 2014 RVO Conference Call. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Jennifer Mullen. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. This is Jennifer Mullen. Thanks for joining the call this morning. We have a number of speakers who are going to talk to you about the EPA announced proposed volumes for 2014 related to renewable fuels. We have Bob Dineen, President of the Renewable Fuels Association, Brent Erickson, Executive Vice President for Bio, Roger Johnson, President of the National Farmers Union, Jeff Lout, who is CEO of POET, and Tom Bias, who is CEO of Growth Energy. And so before we begin, we just want to let folks know that the EPA, as many of you know, put out their numbers today at 2 o'clock. And so our speakers are going to discuss what this means for consumers, how oil companies will benefit, and how the renewable fuel industry will be impacted, both first and second generation fuel. In addition to that, the rural economy impact. So now I'll turn the call over to Bob Dineen with RFA.
Thank you, Jen. I guess we're all just sort of scratching our heads here today, wondering why is this administration telling us to produce less of a clean-burning American fuel? And that's in effect what they are doing by reducing the base RFS from the 14.4 billion gallons required by the statute to, give or take, but about 13 billion gallons, when we can do far more. We are in the midst of harvesting the single largest corn crop in our nation's history, 14 billion bushels. And this would take 500 million bushels of demand away from farmers who planted that historic corn crop on the promise of a growing renewable fuels market, not a artificially constrained one, but every other renewable fuel as well. You're seeing record production of biodiesel today. You're seeing the commercial production of cellulosic ethanol and other advanced biofuels. This is exactly the wrong time to be reducing the required volumes of renewable fuels as opposed to increasing them. Now, EPA is doing this because of a concern about the blend wall. But the blend wall should not be a factor in a waiver decision. And in fact, the minute you introduce blending capacity or blend wall considerations into a decision as to whether or not to waive the program is the minute you take the nation's renewable fuel policy away from the statute and you put it in the hands of the oil companies, who do not want to invest in the infrastructure to allow more than 10% blends to be used. It makes no sense. But boy, my goodness, are the oil companies going to benefit from this. By reducing the amount of ethanol required to be used in this program by 1.4 billion gallons, you are, according to a study that had been done by Louisiana State University, increasing the price of gasoline by about 5.7 cents per gallon. Now, that means Americans are going to be spending $7.6 billion more on gasoline in 2014 if this proposal is finalized. But that's not just where it ends. Refiners will benefit as well by not having to invest in infrastructure, by avoiding costs of the program. And our analysis concludes that oil companies are going to receive a windfall from this proposal of more than $10 billion. Now, last time I checked, the oil companies were doing pretty good on their own. They don't need another artificial $10 billion windfall because EPA decides, oh, no, we're going to reward their bad behavior. We're going to reward their decision not to invest in the infrastructure to allow E85 or to allow E15 to be used by consumers. And, you know, we're going to give them this additional benefit. It simply makes no sense. But I'll turn it over now to Brent Erickson to talk a little bit about the impact that this is going to have on the cellulose and advanced biofuels industry, because that's going to be significant as well.
Thank you, Bob. For those of you who don't know, BIO is the Biotechnology Industry Organization, and we represent more than 50 companies in the advanced biofuel space. And we're also baffled by EPA's radical change in posture. We felt like Congress formulated the RFS to push past the blend wall, to force refiners past the blend wall, not to codify it. So we think that this rule will create an intolerable amount of uncertainty, and it could undercut investment for the advanced biofuels industry. We've heard multiple times from our members over the past month since the draft rule was leaked to the press that our investors are already nervous. So I see three things that could happen as a result of this proposed rule, unless it's changed. Existing investments in advanced biofuels could be stranded and existing jobs put at risk. And our companies have put billions of dollars in steel on the ground already. Development of new feedstocks and supply chains for advanced biofuels could be slowed or stopped. And the ramp up of new technologies that are just reaching commercial readiness could be derailed. It appears that EPA is trying to develop a new methodology and taking this radical change in approach, and it creates real uncertainty for investors in advanced biofuels. Investors need to have assurance that the market will make space for advanced biofuels when they're produced. And to date, companies have committed more than $5 billion in private investment for advanced biofuels projects. And there's an additional $2.3 billion in federal and state investment. Industry investments to date have created over 7,600 new permanent jobs and careers, and an additional 7,000 construction jobs have been created. Just to give you an example, Abengoa, one of our member companies, has a project in Hugoton, Kansas, and they've got 1,000 workers on that site today as we speak. And this rule could put that in jeopardy. Advanced biofuels companies are not just commercializing technology and new molecules, they're also trying to build upstream and downstream value chains. So they're working with farmers to plant and harvest new energy crops. Farmers and others aren't going to take risks to plant these crops or collect them if the RFS isn't stable. The rule will undo several years worth of work to establish these new value chains. It also, people don't realize it, but the RFS is driving innovation beyond biofuels. It's driving innovation in the renewable chemical sector and even in synthetic biology. So it's having an effect all across America and helping us keep our lead in biotech innovation. We understand that the rule came about after the rise in RIN prices, but those RIN prices reflect our industry's ongoing difficulty in accessing the market. And I'm sure others will talk about that, and we can talk about that during the Q&A session as well. And again, EPA seems to want to try to develop what they're calling a durable methodology, but we can't have a durable methodology for setting the annual volumes that starts with asking the oil refiners how much of our product they're willing to accept and blend. That's just a terrible way to begin. So we think this rule is intolerable to the advanced biofuel community, and we'll work hard to see that we can rectify it during the coming comment period. And I'll hand it off now to Roger Johnson.
Thank you, Brent. I'm Roger Johnson, president of the National Farmers Union. Before I took this job about 4.5 years ago, I served for a dozen years as North Dakota Agriculture Commissioner. In a huge part of the effort that I did then, and even before then, and what I do today in my current job, is to try to help develop rural economies. There were times in the past where we literally had dozens and dozens and dozens of new value-added ag startup groups that we were trying to do during much of the 90s, coming out of the very dark days of the 1980s when agriculture was in a deep depression. Of all of those, the vast majority failed. There was one shining star in the bunch, though, and that was biofuels. It was renewable energy. It was all these things around the long-term future, a clean future, in creating economic development that was sustainable. And for us to have gone through that whole period of time and all that economic anguish and anxiety, and then to emerge from that with a really shining new industry, the biofuels industry, was something that made a whole lot of people feel good. And it helped build rural America and continues to help build rural America. Farmers need communities in order to raise families, in order to go to schools, in order to buy their inputs. They need a robust rural economy. That happened in large part in the last decade and a half because of what's happened with biofuels. And I think this message from EPA says we're going to stop all of that. We're in fact going to go backwards because these new numbers actually come in at levels lower than what we're currently producing, both in terms of corn-based ethanol as well as advanced biofuels. And that is a terrible, terrible signal about future development for the ag economy. Interestingly, Bob talked about the record corn crop, the 14 billion bushels that we're going to raise this year. You know what happened in the last year because of this billion bushel corn crop that's coming on board? We've seen corn prices drop roughly in half. They're just barely above $4 a bushel today. Break even for most farmers today is just above $4, $4.5 a bushel. We get one more good crop and we're going to have farmers deeply struggling to make ends meet because of what's happening in this economy. And what you just see EPA doing is sucking a half a billion bushels of demand out of the corn market. There's one thing that will result from that. It's going to drive those prices even lower and put a whole lot of farmers in very, very difficult economic straits. So this is a proposal that we are deeply, deeply disappointed about. Let me make one final point about how this directly impacts farmers. The result of this is not only going to reduce income for farmers because of the price of corn and other commodities, they're going to follow it, going down. It's also going to increase costs for farmers. Those costs that others have talked about with increasing energy costs as a result of moving the biofuels out of the market and pushing more petrol fuels back into the market, that gets reflected on the bottom line on farmers' income statements and balance sheets because now their fuel costs are going to go higher as a result of this. Very likely their fertilizer costs will go higher. Very possible chemical costs will go higher because all of those are significant derivatives of the petroleum industry. So this is something that we are deeply, deeply disappointed with. And let me now turn this over to Jeff Laut, who's the CEO of POET, one of the industry leaders in biofuels. Jeff?
Thank you. Well, echoing some of the things that were, as you just said, you know, POET is also extremely troubled by the latest proposed numbers. I mean, whereas a company that was one of the early pioneers of the corn ethanol business and helped build that to nearly 10% of today's fuel supply, creating the first competitor to gasoline in this country ever in the history of automobiles and liquid fuels, we have also been one of the pioneers to build on top of that the cellulosic proportion as well, which has a vision of several billion gallons. We are building under construction as we speak of a corn stover cellulosic plant, which is co-located next to one of our corn ethanol plants in Emmitsburg, Iowa. That plant is expected to come online in the second quarter of next year. It will produce approximately 20 million gallons, and our plan was to validate that technology, which was all stimulated investment from what was set out in the RFS. We've invested tens and hundreds of millions of dollars along with our partner DSM, which is also evidence of bringing foreign investment is one of the things that the RFS has done. And now we are shocked actually by the numbers that are in the proposal that says not only are we going to slow down the vision and the plan of continuing to create an alternative to gasoline and competition for American consumers, but we're going to maybe retreat from and turn back the numbers. And it is grave concern to us as a company who's invested millions of dollars not only in building corn-based ethanol business, but is at the heels of commercializing cellulosic ethanol as well. And it seems like its hand would be handing a complete win to the oil industry. I can tell you that as we begin planning our capital build-out for replication of cellulosic plants in the U.S. here, that one of the biggest concerns we get from lenders and from potential investors are the uncertainty around the RFS2. And today's proposal only will solidify their concern about stable policy and likely will dry up any potential investment, thereby nearly making it impossible to have any type of build-out of a cellulosic industry. And I think the common fallacy that everybody seems to forget is that it's this either-or discussion between corn ethanol and cellulosic. And the fact is, all of the technology that we've developed, all of the infrastructure and the investment that we've made has been made on the foundation of our corn ethanol business. It's been built on the foundation on whether it's expanding technology, whether it's using our resources. They're synergistic. The two plants are. They're co-located. They share energy. They share resources in terms of labor as well as technology. And I can't understand for the life of me why we would even want to begin to take and turn back policy, which was moving this country forward, which was going to be saving consumers money and creating consumer choice for the first time in our history, and now really turning us back potentially decades if we do indeed follow the proposed numbers that were released today. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Growth Energy CEO Tom Bias.
Thanks, Jeff, and as all the speakers have indicated prior to me, I think we're really, really disappointed in the proposed rulemaking. And I would remind everyone it is proposal, and I know all of us on the call today and everyone in the sector will be working hard to show that how they came up with a proposal like this, which I think is not only disappointing, but it goes against the intent of the RFS, how we can prove to them that their rationale was incorrect. You know, we should be moving forward, not backwards. It was just a little over 40 years ago this past month that our nation faced the first OPEC oil embargo. We've seen this movie before. It's kind of like the movie Groundhog Day. We've had economic shock after economic shock based on our addiction to oil and foreign oil, and the renewable fuels industry has certainly helped reduce our dependence on foreign oil, but we still import roughly half the oil we use in this country. We're still beholden to a cartel in a region of the world that doesn't like us, our nation, setting the price of oil. And like any business, you wouldn't put all your eggs in one basket. And for our fuel system, putting all our eggs in the fossil fuel basket has led to a lot of economic shock. It's led to loss of lives of our brave soldiers, of maiming our soldiers. And we can do better than this. We need, again, to move forward, not backwards. The risk to the rural economy is tremendous. You know, since the 2008 economic collapse, there's been one sector in the economy that's been brighter than others, and that's been the rural economy. And why, in the time we need to be creating jobs, we want to go backwards and risk that economic calamity again is, I think, questionable to all of us. We can do better than that. We're going to be able, I think, now that the comments are out there, or the proposed rule, to demonstrate that this big fear-mongering that's perpetuated by big oil so they can continue to monopolize our fuel choices as well, and we'll be able to change it.
Well, I guess, this is Bob Dineen. I guess just to thank everybody for being on the call today, and each of us, I'm certain, would be more than happy to answer any follow-up questions that any of you might have. Thank you very much.